we want to be able to find out what a seller's true motivation is, it really comes down to about three categories. You got time, how fast do they want to sell? And of course, the easy one, that's price. The third one is primarily convenience.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, welcome to Real Grit. I got David Pupo here with me. He's from Florida. He's an investor in, well, both house side and then into multifamily. So I'm excited to have him here. David, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, bud. How's everything been?
Man, it's good. It's good to see you. You and I have known each other for a few years. It's been a few years since we've seen one another in person. So I'm excited to connect up here with you.
Yeah, absolutely, Neil. I mean, COVID did everything like that, right? Everything became a little bit further, but somehow a little bit closer too. Now everybody's on Zoom like this.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that. Well, tell me, we all started someplace. What was your first entry point to real estate?
First entry point to real estate was really actually family. Growing up in Fort Lauderdale, my mom worked for a title company, owned a title company. My aunt was a real estate agent. We had cousins that were mortgage brokers until 2007, then they weren't mortgage brokers anymore. And then I went away to college over here in Orlando, and I got away from real estate actually for a bit. You know, I went to UCF, got my marketing and finance degree. At that time, I was also dating a girl who's now my wife and fell in love, and we stayed here in Orlando. Went to corporate world for a bit and I realized I did not like it. It was kind of a cool job. It was recruiting for like a recruitment company that would find engineers nationwide. Yeah. But the thing is, I'm not an engineer and I didn't like the job. I was putting in 70, sometimes heck 80 hours on a bad week. And if I was making $80,000, like, you know, that was good, right?
Wow.
But I was depressed. I'd come home, burnt out, didn't like what I was doing. And I mean, heck, it almost pushed me and my girlfriend at that time. Yep. We almost broke up. I wasn't my same person.
That level hour, you were working two jobs for one job's money.
At that time, I'm driving around a lot, started listening to a lot of my favorite podcast is Bigger Pockets. That was one that I think introduced to a lot of people, started hearing about stuff like real estate wholesaling. And I was like, there's no way these people are really making this kind of money. This just doesn't make sense. How am I doing this with high level engineers? And like, I'm just hearing about this guy like Tom Kroll, who's now my coach and who's been my coach for a bit now, talking about making $20,000 on a deal on a property he never saw. And it took like 2 hours. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. How is that possible? Right.
Yeah. So you're working the job and then what happened?
So I went to what we have as a modern day circus in town that comes in like Cesspath, I think it was called at that time. And they pitch you your dreams. They pitch you all these things that you're missing. And then they throw some really good offers at the end of the day. And then the fly-by-night company isn't there. You're like, what did I just spend $10,000 on out of college? I was like, man, I'm broke. Like, that's real broke, right? Like, I was already broke coming out of college. And then that happened. And after that, I was like, well, you know what? Luckily enough, my now wife was supportive at the time with it. And she was like, well, if you're going to do it, this is the time to do it. We don't really have that much in terms of liabilities, like go grind. And so I saved up about 3 months of like expenses just in case of anything. And I mean, looking back, 3 months is nothing. But at that time, it was like 3 months, 90 days, I could do it. And so I joined a brokerage here in Orlando. And I got my first deal done in the first 2 weeks. But at that time, it was with a broker. So I was cutting up a lot of profit. But I was just grinding, you know, learning.
You were with the broker there. Did you become an agent?
I have my real estate license.
Okay. So that was the entry point then from exiting your JOB was to become a real estate agent selling houses.
The brokerage that I found actually focused primarily in investments.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So what they did at this time, there was still a market for like short sales and foreclosures. It wasn't all the way gone, but it was still there. And this brokerage here in town during that financial crash of like 2008 to about 12, 13, like they focused on all the short sales and REOs, and they did really well with it.
Got it. All right. So were you being an agent as a broker? Is that how you earn money, or were you wholesaling?
I was primarily wholesaling.
Okay, primarily wholesaling. You joined a brokerage, mm-hmm. but you were primarily wholesaling there. Okay, mm-hmm. got it. And so then has that been the core focus from then forward, largely on the wholesale side, or did you venture into buy and holds or fix and flips, anything else?
Yeah, we've done a couple of fix and flips. I'd say I probably do maybe two, maximum three a year. I don't call myself a fix and flipper. I could honestly tell you, I don't have that interior design eye. Yeah. Like, you're never going to find me wanting to go to floor and decor. Like, yes. I'm going to be honest, like, do not like, don't throw some razzle dazzle at me. Yeah. Like, that's why I like rentals a lot more. I have about a dozen rentals right now.
Okay.
Most yeah. of them are either duplexes. I have one quad and a couple of single families.
Yep.
And I love rentals because it's rinse and repeat, man. Just yeah. rinse and repeat it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally understand that. You got to get your fix and flips down to rinse and repeat. That's what we did on our side. I mean, there's only mm-hmm. one paint color that even exists. There are no choices. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So bring me back. It sounds like overwhelmingly your business from early on, even to today, is wholesale driven.
That's still a primary purpose. And I mean, if you get wholesaling done right, it can be a really great ATM machine, right?
Yes, you're totally right. Now, do you operate out of one market, just one market?
We primarily do the entire state of Florida. We have gone into like North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee. So we've done a lot of the Southeast. Right now, we are actively marketing in Florida and Tennessee.
Thinking back over the last handful of years, what has been the most challenging piece of wholesaling?
I would say the most challenging part of wholesaling is learning yourself. And I am somebody who has like ADHD. I'm your typical visionary. And I think when it comes to wholesaling, the actual model isn't really that complicated, right? You want to learn how to generate leads and you want to learn how to convert leads. If I had to really make it that simple, generate leads, find motivated seller, convert on those leads, yep. right? Just yep. make it as simple as possible. But of course, we're humans and people that are about as ADHD oriented as I am get sidetracked.
Yeah. So you chase shiny objects then and try mm-hmm. to figure out what to do next. And how has that manifested itself? Largely in the marketing piece or is it other sections of the business?
Other sections of the business, getting into, say, fix and flips, getting into the rental markets, being able to learn better techniques. Of course, that's always something that has to be done, and especially in this current market, right?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. The market has shifted, and it's ever-changing. You probably feel that. I'm going to think the coast probably felt it, or maybe Phoenix felt it a lot earlier than what we do in the Midwest. Yeah. What's the market? We're recording this in November of 22, early November. What does the market feel like? What's it look like? What's the sentiment now in the market?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit more pessimistic like about 2 months ago. That's when the Federal Reserve didn't quite show their hand yet. They were just coming out and showing incremental basis point hikes. Now they pretty much have just told us as of right now, hey, we're keeping this momentum going. We are pushing until we see a reason not to. So I think now we're kind of coming back to that reality. But unfortunately, we all as a society have anchored our minds that 2-3% interest is like obviously like really good. And now we're in now bordering 7-8%. And now we think that the world's on fire.
Yeah, it's certainly, it's changed and changed quick. Do you remember not that long ago, never even heard the word transient in my life, but I heard the word transient more times than I can count coming out of the Fed, that inflation was transient, right? Now, hey, in the Fed's defense, given long enough time frame, everything's transient, including us as individual humans, our lives are transient. Yeah.
I live in a transient city of Orlando, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah. It is hard to gauge exactly where that thing's headed because, you know, it wasn't long ago they're going, man, it's no big deal. Now, it's a real problem and there's no slowing down anytime soon.
Right.
So you're seeing this play out. Have you taken any actions or what actions are you taking inside your business to plan to account for an ever-changing market?
Yeah, we were talking a little bit earlier about Neil. It's making sure that your operations fit too right now. That's something that I had to go through a lot of adversity earlier this year, and I was meeting with my CPAs and I was just getting everything organized because we also saw this starting to come up. And so what we started doing is making our business and operations a lot more efficient, cutting down unnecessary waste, right?
Yeah.
So I would throw out a quick suggestion to your audience right now for anybody who hasn't done that financial deep dive. Go print up 1 month worth of expenses, get a red highlighter, a yellow highlighter, and a green highlighter, and you just start going through every single line item. If it's red, you got to cut it.
Yep.
Do that within the next 24 hours. Yellow means, is it possible to substitute it, right? Can you find maybe a cheaper option? And then green, obviously green means go. So if it's like a really big revenue producer for you, don't put that in red.
Yeah.
So that was one of those exercises that I did. And you'd be surprised how much fat you got on an operation.
Take stock of what the expense lines look like, because mm-hmm. oftentimes those grow and things creep in that just don't attribute to the bottom line anymore, especially when...
Oh, man. In our world, Neil, I mean, you buy this one software, you buy this one audio program, you buy this one coaching program. I mean, in our world of real estate investing, it is crazy how much stuff, when I first started doing this, that you pay for that you don't even realize. I had two different accounts doing the same thing. Like, I don't know if you know like what Zapier is, right? Yep. The little automated bridges between websites. I had two different versions of Zapier that I was paying for. Like, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah. And some people are like, how is that even possible? And what happens is that when you're so ingrained in the business, not on the business, you're so in the day-to-day, in the weeds, that and go, and chasing the next $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 deal to try to get a deal locked up. Some of these things just grow. I see this time and time again in small businesses.
Absolutely.
In our industry. Have you been doing anything from an offer standpoint, from a contact sport with a seller standpoint? I know creative financing is I keep hearing more and more about it. And I think a lot of people are just laying the groundwork for what may be coming. I think it's going to become more important as we move forward. Are you doing anything in that? Creative financing a part of your world when you were dealing with sellers?
Absolutely. It's more important now than ever. These are new muscles that if people haven't started using these muscles yet, these are these new muscles that you got to start flexing. Yeah. And yeah, we've come up with something to help out with increase our conversions actually a lot, Neil. It's called our triple offer approach. The triple offer approach is being able to present three offers to, I would say, very interested parties. I wouldn't say we're doing it for every single lead, right? Yeah. Want to start finding out. I'm going to throw some knowledge. I'm going to drop some bombs right now, right? So we want to be able to find out what a seller's true motivation is, right?
Yep.
So it really comes down to about three categories. You got time, how fast do they want to sell?
Yep.
You got, of course, the easy one, that's price, right? And then the third one is primarily convenience. They're out of state. If it's a probate and like the family doesn't live around the house anymore, or the house is torn up, convenience sometimes confuses people. And it's like, just essentially it's as is, you're just making this an easier approach for the people.
Yep.
Right. So it's very critical to find out with any sellers that you're talking to, what is the top priority? And then from that, you can now contour a solution around it. I really realized this actually back in COVID. When COVID hit, that there was going to be this tidal wave of foreclosures. Remember, everybody was gearing up. We're all ready. Correct. We're like, yeah, let's get this. We're ready.
Right.
And then the wave never came, right? They did all of the forbearance programs.
Yep.
Correct. And slowly what we thought was going to be a 60-foot tidal wave was not much of a low tidal wave.
Correct. Right?
So I started flexing those muscles a little bit more at that time. And now it's become just as prevalent as I thought it would be then, but now it's happening now. So yeah, we're being able to understand when we're having conversations with sellers, what's their top priority? Can we create a solution around it?
So the three offers, do you actually end up presenting three offers, or you just craft offers that speak differently to one of those three motivating factors?
The three offers are going to be crafted around one of those motivating factors.
Do you actually present three offers?
Yep.
Okay. Three proposals. What's the difference? Walk me through. Pick one of those three motivating factors.
I'm going to walk you through all three. Not all right.
Bring
right
it
now.
To me. Starting.
All right. So offer number one is used as like an anchor. This is just your standard cash wholesale offer, right? Yep. There's nothing really too different about this at all. You're anchoring expectations for offer one.
It's the lowest price full cash offer. Okay. Got it.
Precisely.
Yep.
Right. Offer two is what I call the steering wheel offer. This offer is geared toward either pushing people to one offer, like offer one, or probably what I'll show you in offer three.
Okay, got it.
Right? So this one is going to be one that has interest. And well, I'll give you the backstory about it, but I'm going to just lay down the three offers first, right?
Yep.
So the steering wheel offer, there's interest involved, a slight down payment, but it's going to be them taking turns. So, but this one is going to be crafted as a purchase price a little bit closer to the cash price than it will be for the third offer that I'm going to go through, right? Yep. So on the third offer, we're going to go through and we're going to either hit what they're asking for or even possibly above it. And what we're going to do is we're going to create a 0% seller financing third offer. Let's say like one that I just did for a multifamily. Mm-hmm. Our cash one was all the way down at 200. Our interest steering wheel offer was at 240. And then we did our seller financing one at 300, right? And so what that does is that that anchor helped them out with like, well, 200 sounds really low. And then 240 is like, oh, I mean, it's higher, but it's not quite what I want. Yep. He was asking 280 and I threw out 300. And I showed each proposal and and more times than not, the third offer seems a lot more enticing if they only want to talk about price.
All right. So give me those scenarios then. 200 cash, got it. 240, how much money was down in that offer, in the steering wheel offer?
Sure. 10%.
10% down and interest is what?
I created that one at 5%.
5% interest. And what's
actually what, 5.5%, because then I remember the monthly mortgage payment being $1,450.
Have you been to the vault? RealGritVault.com. Listen, we've got multiple guests who come on and oftentimes they bring us little tips, tricks, tools, scripts, Excel calculators, a multitude of things, and they share it. They share it for you. You can get them totally free, totally free. RealGritVault.com. Never been on the show who's brought everything. It's all behind the vault. Get it. RealGritVault.com.
Got it.
And then what are the payment structure then? What's the AM and what's is there a balloon?
The balloon was based off of 10 years, right? And so there was a 10-year balloon, so 120 payments, and the interest was 5.5%. The monthly mortgage payment was going to be $1,450 toward him.
Yeah, well, that was some sort of, you got a 20-25 year AM somewhere in that range.
It was 30. It was all based off of a 30-year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So you got a 30-year AM. All right. Now give me the $300,000 one, the one that you really wish they'd take.
Yeah. So, and then they did take, by the way. So that one was 300. There is no AM or amortization schedule. We created a monthly payment. This is also why I like the third option a lot, because I made it slightly lower on a monthly payment, but I made the down payment 20%.
All right. So down pay 20%.
The monthly payment to them was $1,250.
And no interest.
Zero interest.
How many payments it ended up being? Whatever it
that
is.
Was gonna, that's 60 payments.
We got a balloon then.
So that's 5 years.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So 5 years.
So how that one structured out is we ended up finalizing at actually 25% down payment. So that ends up being $75,000 down. And then over the course of 5 years at $1,250 ends up being another $75,000. So at the exactly right. So, and I brought in a partner on this one and the only thing I paid for was the inspection.
You paid for the inspection. You brought a partner in on it who stroked the check.
He stroked the check for the 20% down payment and then covered any rehab.
Okay. Got it. And then you end up 50-50. Is that how you structure the partnership? Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because what we saw with this property, it's a four unit.
Yep.
And what we saw with this one is that we structured it to be $1,250. And the monthly amount, these were all 1-1s, but they were very big 1-1s. We found out that a typical 1-1 around here, maybe $800, $900 a month, that this one could actually stretch it out to $1,100 because of how big it was. And so we knew that we could get this to get to four total units being at $4,400.
$4,400, you could operate this at 40%, 45% expense ratio, somewhere in that kind of range.
Yeah.
And then cash flow the rest. Got it. Walk me through this. So I'm a seller. You're going to present me an offer. What's that conversation look like? How are you presenting three offers?
Yeah. You've had to have multiple conversations with these
yes.
people. This is not a conversation that you're hitting immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, so, in the preference, and like I was mentioning on the second offer, this has to have an avatar, right? Your ideal seller. In this case, it is probably going to be somebody who has 100% equity, because the third offer can't happen if you don't have 100%.
Maybe a tiny mortgage to pay off, but that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then, yeah, something I have structured one like this actually in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where our down payment paid off the mortgage and then it was 100% interest.
Yep. Okay.
I mean, 100%, I'm sorry, 100% principal, my apologies.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We have done it that way. So it can work. The third one can work for something with a mortgage, but you're right. It has to be pretty minuscule. So we structured it. Your avatar has to be somebody who's a good seller who is willing to hear all the approaches. And then at the end of the day, the third offer, they, as we already just mentioned, has to be either no mortgage or very little.
Yeah. And so it's as simple as you've teased them, if you will, along the way, or at least open their eyes up to maybe what a creative sell could look like, or an owner finance selling it on terms. You've introduced that conversation somewhere. They've said, well, yes, or maybe, I don't really know, which is what we hear a lot, is I don't know what that would look like, right? And so then you craft multiple offers, present those offers, and then oftentimes it doesn't, it's not a yes or no, it's an either or.
Right. You know, like those old school game show hosts, I mean, game shows where like behind door number one, behind door number two, behind door number three, right? It's an illusion of control at this point. They feel like they're picking the best option for them.
That's right.
They also, what is so good about this, it feels like a curated approach. The seller feels very important that you have taken the time to demonstrate three offers. Right. So at the end of the day, who's behind all three doors? It's us, right? All these offers work for us. Right. If they decide to go with our wholesale, guess what? I own a wholesale company. I'm all good, right? The second one, I don't have as much of a down payment. Now I just secured seller financing.
Right.
Third one, of course, this is our nirvana, right? This is where we want to be.
Yep. Are you adding in, I'm going to get much deeper. I'm going to go granular real quick. Are you adding in substitution of collateral at all?
No.
Are you adding in the ability to subordinate, meaning the seller would allow a first position, somebody else to go in front of them on a loan?
I haven't had to do a first position on them yet. I think I could have the conversation with them, but I haven't had to have that structure yet.
Yeah. That's another curious piece, is your ability in that door number three, where you're putting 20% down. If you get the seller to subordinate to someone else, you can go to the bank, take the deal to the bank. The bank now goes in first position at 20%. Seller subordinates. Seller's the remainder 80%. Now you're into the deal without a partner, with no money into it. And in this scenario, as you just outlined in door number three, is that that maybe will cash flow just fine.
Yeah.
Because
this one needs a lot of work. So, I haven't had to do that one, but that's a good one. I actually like that alteration to it. I haven't had to do that yet.
Yeah.
Most of these properties that I've done have had just some people who just stopped caring about their properties.
Yeah.
So when need some work.
Yeah. When you got a heavy lift at some point, you're like, oh, we still got to bring, we're still writing checks to go rehab. Right. And then it's a different scenario there. I agree with your assessment, and you're ahead of the curve. The ability to form, put this into your process. Out of 10 offers that you make, 10 different sellers, how many times are you presenting three offers?
No, I wouldn't say a whole bunch, because you have to have an avatar for
Most people, correct.
And so this only works out because I am also somebody that does separate mailing lists for a lot of multifamily. I really like these a lot for multifamily, because then you have that now availability, bring in partnerships, and cash flow is still there. It's going to be very difficult on a single family. It's not impossible. That's certainly not what I'm saying. Very quickly, you could be in a situation where, I mean, it could be a short-term rental, and then boom, you're getting the amount of income that you would from a multifamily.
Yeah, that's largely because you'd rather have a cash flowing asset that's a multifamily versus a single family anyway.
I always want more doors.
Yeah, more doors, one roof. You're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
What's your team structure look like?
The team right now is, we have a data manager. We have two lead managers. We have two closers that are commissioned. And we have one dispo person that creates write-ups and is doing some of our JV stuff. And then we have a dispo closer who is also commission-based.
Got it. So the leads come into the lead manager, they flush them out, they get them to the commission salespeople who then lock it up, and then it passes to the dispo side.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the kind of the one dispo person doing the marketing pieces, establishing things, the other one doing the closing, the selling.
Bingo.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Are you using Novations at all?
Yeah, we've done a few, especially I think they'll definitely make their way into a lot more popular methods right now. As we both know, we have some good friends that have been in some masterminds with us that have some really good Novation courses. So I've been fortunate enough to be able to, we started hearing about these few years ago.
Yeah.
And now they're here, right?
Yeah. 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 No, there's no doubt about that. What's one little known habit you possess that attributes to your success?
I would just say pure curiosity. I know it's a weird thing to say. It's not quite a habit, but I just find myself to be a very curious person. And I think that's what leads to shiny object syndrome. It's how I learn a lot. I want to always learn a lot. It's been something that's been the shiny object syndrome, but then at certain times it's been like I said, I when I saw COVID happen, my curiosity hit with creative financing.
Yeah.
Like I was like, all right, I'm going to learn this from some of the best people around that I know, and I'm going to just take this in.
Yeah.
Right. So it's been always having that knack of just curiosity to be able to just want to learn more.
Yeah. And there's never an end in this business. You could do nothing but learn every day forever. There's just always something new to learn here, isn't there?
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, on the other side of the learning is you got to take action on it.
That's right. You got to put it to work.
It's cool to pay for a course, but the course is useless if you don't put it to work.
Yeah. No, you're spot on about that. Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call 4 for Impact.
4 for Impact.
So your favorite quote, you never know how strong you are until being strong is your only choice. Bob Marley said that. What about that resonates most with you?
I just feel like I've had a lot of times in life where I could have just given in and just like succumbed to pressure. And, you know, I had a really strong mother, a single mother. And, you know, you don't know much when you're growing up, but my mom worked 2 jobs with the title company stuff, was also taking me to all my sports games. Also had my brother who wasn't a good kid. He was always getting in trouble and she was still always in the stands. And I just saw how strong of a person you can be. And, you know, it's been something when I've also encountered knee injuries. I've had 2 reconstructive knee injuries, right? So nothing has put you literally on your back quicker than a knee injury. Yeah. And you now have to relearn how to walk 2x.
Wow.
Right? So do be able to do that. And then earlier on this year, me and a partner decided to go separate ways. But what I did not know is that the partner also just left me with a pretty nice tab at the end. And I had to recoup and restructure our entire organization. And it was part that almost led me into a really dark spot. But I knew that I could push through. I knew I had really good people in my corner. I had great friends, family, mentors that all supported me. And I was able to turn it around once again. So I just think that adversity is inevitable. And every time you get hit with it, you think like, how am I going to overcome this? And then suddenly something within you can overcome it. And then you're like, well, dang, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Bring on the next one.
Is it fair to say that we create more in our own mind about how bad something's going to be than what reality gives us?
Oh, isn't that what fear is?
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. Scared of the dark, literally. The difference is a light and, oh, there's nothing there.
100%,
yeah. Man. Yeah, you're totally right. What do you think it is that holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
100% it's limiting beliefs.
How does one break through those limiting beliefs?
Action.
Step by step, taking a piece to convince themselves internally, their subconscious, and in fact, they can do it, and then move forward.
I think, honestly, Neil, this is something I just made a video on yesterday. Yeah. I think we as a society have gotten away from understanding that mistakes are okay.
Oh, well, I totally agree with that. Yes.
You can't progress if you don't make mistakes. It's going to happen.
Right.
Like, it's inevitable. But the thing is that we approach it that if somebody makes a bad move, you know, it's just like a shame. And it's like we shun those people out. And I just think that mistakes have to happen. You don't know what success is if you don't know what failure is.
Yep. No, you're exactly right about that.
And that limiting belief of, well, is this going to happen? What if this happens? What if this happens? Then they get paralyzed, right? Because they don't take the action.
Yep. Happy accidents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just learning something and then moving forward through it. And it often improves you, allows you, as you just said, bring on the next thing, allows you to develop your capacity to take on bigger things, more responsibilities, to step into who you're meant to be.
100%.
Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
Golf. I love golf.
Golf? Yeah. Well, you're in such a great state for it too.
Yeah. Well, growing up, I played every sport known to mankind. I was playing baseball, soccer, football, basketball, everything. And then after 2 knee surgeries, you're like, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to hang up the cleats on those. So I need to channel that inner athlete of me. And I've always had golf because of my grandfather, but now I really dug into it and I really love it. It's that game that you can never be perfect at. And that's
right.
It's very frustrating, but I always recall like thinking about it, like being to hit blackjack at the casino, man. You're like, you hit blackjack. You're like, that's why I'm here, baby. You get a little dopamine hit. And you're like, all right, I got a good drive or I hit that nice putt. Coming back next week.
I'm coming back. I get my lift. Yeah, exactly. That's so good. What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
One that I've done a lot is through our local real estate communities. Yeah. When it comes to any kind of networking events, the nonprofits around here, I really just think that I attribute my success to, as I mentioned to you, when I was in a dark place just earlier this year, I had friends, families, and mentors and coaches in the community that was able to help me get through it. And I think community like that is just really good. And I mean, real estate's our lives, right? Yeah. And so being able to help people out and being able to just get some more of that success, because we are all at day one at one point.
Yep.
And I think a lot of the more seasoned veterans forget that.
Yeah, there's some short memories, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, I really appreciate you coming on. This is a fun conversation. Your ability to implement some of the creative strategies, which I think are coming, but I think you were there long before people really sunk their teeth into it as you jumped on it in COVID. I think it'll prove that'll play out super well for you in the coming years. That, and having go through, you've had some setbacks, some challenges, and certainly business partner, you had to, what you didn't say is what I'm certain of, you had to pick up and do a whole lot more work, because I know that's what happens when somebody isn't doing it.
Yeah.
So you had to go through a whole bunch of things there. I appreciate the time here and the story. I think this resonates, and I think you get a lot of really good tips, especially on the creative side, to help folks.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, this is, as I've been able to grow through, Neil, with just the real estate wholesaling and that career, it's being able to give that opportunity to give back, being able to coach and mentor people to avoid some of these obstacles, right? We always want coaches to help us out, and then we still have to go through our own trials and tribulations and learn certain techniques, and hopefully coaches and mentors there that can help you out with being able to learn it, especially if it's a new skill set. Skill sets are tough, but if you don't get those muscles moving in it, it's never going to happen.
That's exactly right. Yep. No, you're right. We don't know it all. And so everybody at any level can always learn something from somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. If for people, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect, where can they go? What should they do?
Yeah. Number one place is going to be social media. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. You can find me under David Pupo. You can imagine that there's not too many David Pupos in the U.S., but my Instagram handles for TikTok and Instagram are Dollars with David.
Dollars with David. We'll make sure we get that posted below in the show notes for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
David, I appreciate you taking the time, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're going to start uncovering this triple offer approach for a lot more people going forward. We've already been able to buy the domain and we're already creating the website.
Cool.
To be able to start helping people out, because we do feel like this is going to be a necessary skill set that people are going to need, as buyers and especially flippers are going to be pulling away from a lot of different deals right now.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's going to be great. Well, you keep me in the loop as to how things develop there, because whatever, if I can do something to help, love to be a part of it.
Neil, man, I've always appreciated our conversations. You're truly a very genuine, authentic person. And being able to see this type of success that you're having with the podcast, and I know with already your real estate career, it's really great, man. I'm really happy. I mean, heck, we were just talking about before, right? Didn't remember where you were celebrating your birthday because you were traveling all October.
I know. No, it's really great. I appreciate it.
This is why we do it, right? This is why we want to do this job, right? To be able to get away for almost a month and not know where the heck you are.
The ability to make an impact in your family's life and the lives of others. That way, our family certainly sacrificed and dedicated a whole lot to allow us to have lives better than them. And that's my intent, to do it for other folks, anyone listening, and then certainly my own children. You better believe it. Yeah.
Absolutely, man.
No, that's great.
I'm really proud of you.
I appreciate you. Thanks so much. For everybody here, Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Neil Timmons. I've got a question for you. Are you a fix and flipper and want to leverage your skills, build passive income, create bigger paydays? Maybe you buy and hold rental houses and you want to increase your income by working less. Maybe you're executing on the Burr methodology and times being what they are, you're finding more cash locked into a deal. Maybe you want more predictable profits, or maybe this is your first go at real estate. Well, I've got a challenge for you. The 20X Profit Challenge. It's hosted and taught by yours truly. I'm going to teach and show you over the course of 5 days in this totally free challenge how to 20X your profit. Lesson one's a game changer, multiplying your income and capital fast. Lesson two is the perfect plan. I'm going to show you how to be getting off-market 20X profit deals coming to you. The cash flow multipliers, lesson three, how to rapidly force appreciation and income growth. Lesson four is the deal accelerator, buying and holding profit guarantee properties. And lesson five, the wealth accumulator, consistently closing a 20X profit deals. I'm going to show you exactly my methodology, exactly what I did to go from where I was at, not achieving the results I wanted to achieve in my life, not achieving that passive income that I hoped for, that I knew I was capable of, and in 3.5 years, becoming financially free. I'm going to do that in a 5-day free challenge. To sign up, go to 20xprofitchallenge.com, 20xprofitchallenge.com. We've got one coming up. Go there now, register. It's totally free. 20xprofitchallenge.com, and I'll see you in the challenge.